Hello, and welcome to How to Parent Your Highly Sensitive Child Like a Ninja. I'm your host, Megan Thompson, licensed clinical professional counselor and registered play therapist supervisor. We at MTC teach parents how to eliminate the daily meltdown and shutdown cycle for your sensitive children and teens. Highly sensitive children make up 15 to 20% of the population, according to research that has been gathered for over a century. And this podcast answers one question: how can you raise emotionally intelligent children, stop walking on eggshells, and help your child express their needs safely without punishments, yelling, or coddling? If you want to know the answer, you're in the right place.
Today, we have Megan Thompson, who is here to give us insights into how to better understand our highly sensitive littles and how to set up a successful homeschool experience for them. Megan Thompson is a licensed clinical professional counselor, a registered play therapist supervisor, and a parent coach, mental health consultant. She has been working with highly sensitive children, teens, and their families for over 10 years. She helps parents of highly sensitive children and teens eliminate the daily meltdown shutdown cycle in as little as 8 weeks through her coaching program. She also playfully homeschools her oldest, age 7 and a half, and also has a 1.5-year-old, both girls. Welcome, Megan. I am so excited to have you.
Yes, likewise. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Most welcome. Please tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey to supporting sensitive children and their families.
Sure. So I have been somewhat cognizant of the highly sensitive temperament trait since I was 2 when my sister was born. and we didn't know that, right? She was raised alongside me. I'm not highly sensitive. My parents aren't highly sensitive. And we have a brother who's, he and I are 6 years apart. So 4 years later, the 3 kids. And we just thought that my sister was dramatic. We recognized sensitivity, but we saw sensitivity as a bad thing, right? You know, suck it up, let's get going, move on. So my parents are definitely, you know, very productive and effective members of society. They're lovely people. I have a great relationship with them. They were doing the very best that they could, and they didn't know how to raise my sister well in a manner that allowed her to be resilient and emotionally intelligent, because, you know, they're boomers, right? So the awareness of human psychology and child development wasn't available to our parents. like it is to us today, right? All that stuff, all that research that started in the 1920s and even earlier on sat in university libraries. And so I had this big aha moment a few years into my career as a mental health provider, a child therapist, once I was trained in dialectical behavior therapy. And this is an evidence-based treatment, the only evidence-based treatment that is effective for sensitive people who are born sensitive, who engage in chronic suicidal behaviors, chronic self-harm behaviors, and are in and out of the hospital. So this is a cycle situation going on. And these are children, teens, and adults who don't have trauma histories. Now, if they do have trauma histories, they can also end up in the hospital. But what's important to understand is that that evidence-based treatment was designed for people who didn't have major scary life events in their past, like my family did not have that. And it was a huge aha moment for me at that point in my career. At that point, it was about 5 years past, maybe a little less than 5 years, about three past my master's degree. But it was a huge shift in my understanding of how personality and temperament is simply not included in the mental health world, right? I started in the mental health world in high school. My first internship was at a residential treatment center for young boys. And, so I basically professionally grew up in the field. And had seen it all, worked in juvie, worked in, and again, supervising residential treatment center as I aged and had many more years of experience as a clinician, as well as worked in outpatient. So that's basically the span of my career. And one thing that I noticed over the course of at this point, it's close to 15 years post-masters, is that sensitive children are drastically underserved in the mental health world because temperament and personality isn't taught in mental health education for clinicians, whether you're a psychologist, you're a licensed clinical professional counselor, master's level like myself, social worker, also master's level clinicians, and psychiatrists. So the whole gamut, we're not taught personality. So I had to go learn it extra. And thankfully, I was blessed to get access to a train-the-trainer training early in my career.
Wow. That is very important. Yeah, the fact that you're saying the temperament isn't taught and people are presenting with these issues that link to temperament, yikes, that's a big gap, especially for parents. So now my question for you is, you're talking about highly sensitive temperament. What exactly are we talking about? What is a highly sensitive temperament?
So when we're considering how somebody experiences the world, their disposition, their general nature, that's what we're talking about when we're addressing temperament. All right. So you're either reserved or you're introverted, right? You might be extroverted. You might be considered more dominant or assertive personality. And other people might be considered more thoughtful and more sensitive. And they see more details than others, right? And the piece to temperament that is highlighted as and named as highly sensitive pictures about 20% of the population, right? This research started in the 1960s when DBT studying started in the clinical world. However, Elaine Aron coined the term in the 1990s. So about 30 years later, a psychologist started to study temperament outside of the worst case scenario, right? As a parent, we never want to raise our children only trying to avoid the worst case scenario, self-harm, suicide, right? But, and so thankfully, Elaine Aron took this term, coined it, named it, and started to study sensitive people who ended up in her office as a therapist, as adults, where she noticed that they had many years of their lives where they were thought of as too much and too intense. And their experiences, their emotional experiences were very deep. But one thing that she related to herself was that their thinking process was very deep. And this is really important when I get to explaining the temperament type, right? So temperament type for a highly sensitive person takes into account four characteristics. One is that the person is very deeply thinking. They process a lot of information and they're taking in much more information as the average person. So as a parent, you're looking at a child who is asking very deep questions, very wise-minded questions. They might be considered an old soul, right? Mm. So as homeschoolers, we have a great opportunity to notice that our children, most of our children who are not schooled in a typical school environment, who are instead schooled in a homeschool environment, are asking, deep, wise questions because they have the opportunity to spend more time usually on what they're learning, right? And it's also true that one out of every five children experiences the world at a more intense level because they're taking in more information from the world and they're thinking about that differently, right? So when I explain this to parents, that deep processing, it's like if you were to ask a child to look at the sky, you're laying on your back on a picnic blanket, and you're saying, "Show me what you see in the clouds." And a highly sensitive child is going to say, "Well, that looks like a mushroom because it, has the little bottom and then a fluffy top. And then this one over here looks like a deer, so it must be in the forest. And then there's, streaky clouds over here, so there's some trees and, dot, da, 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 da. And that's why I see this cloud as a mushroom." Whereas a non-highly sensitive child will say, "It's a mushroom because there's a stem and a thing that looks like an umbrella. Ta-da," right? And those two observations are very much okay. They're, point blank, 80% of the population is not going to be as detail oriented as the other 20%. And so we have the deep processing. They come up with lots of reasons why they're coming to their conclusions because they're taking in more information from the world. Now, this is the first piece, deep processing, right? What's next is that they are easily overstimulated especially if they don't have effective emotion regulation skills and emotional intelligence, right? So easily overstimulated means that the sensory information they take from the world, you know, swishy shirts, scratchy collars, you know, jeans are all
Is it like those?
Bringing in.
Sorry,
Yeah,
is
go
it
ahead,
like
keep
most?
going.
I know I've encountered children who they're very sensitive to like the tags in their shirts and things. You have to cut them out. They can't focus. It's overwhelming almost for them.
So that sensory information gives your skin something to notice and pay attention to. And if you don't have the skill set to manage that information and feel settled while receiving that information consistently, then your brain will act as if it's on fire. I can't, right? And it's nails on a chalkboard response because your nervous system is overloaded. And that's where the easily overstimulated piece comes in. And I think this is a piece that is, and I'm so glad we're having this conversation, because many parents will read Elaine Aaron's book, work from the 90s or any of the other more broad focused books. And they take that word easily overstimulated to mean that the trait indicates that your child will be regularly easily overstimulated. And one thing that I teach my clients and talk about a lot is that sense of being easily overstimulated, it's actually a skill gap. So sensitive children who have emotion regulation skills and have skills to manage their nervous system effectively don't actually respond to the tag issues as intensely as they used to. Right. And so this is why we work directly with parents, because part of that is related to the environment at home, which is why we're having some of this conversation today. But I want to go back to making sure that we're focusing on this easily overstimulated, that is due to, you know, the emotions they might be experiencing, the emotions of other people, which I'll get to in a moment, as well as sensory information and how busy their brain is. Right? Brain scans demonstrate on highly sensitive adults that the highly sensitive brain is using more brain power, right? So if you see a brain scan, you got that heat map. We have a cross-section of the brain here. And a non-highly sensitive adult might show, and maybe this makes more sense to look at the top down, because most brain scans, if you look at them on Google, they're paying attention to the top down, right? And a non-highly sensitive person, I'll just take my, I always like to use whatever's on hand. I'll take my hair tie here. And,
flexible.
Right? Of course, I'm a play therapist. So anything is a demonstration tool. So we've got this, this amount of brain. Okay. This amount of the brain is used in any given situation, regular everyday situation. However, with a highly sensitive person, we've got much more of the brain being utilized at any given time, which is a superpower if you know how to hone it. So that's the easily overstimulated piece. Okay. Then we go into emotional responsivity. Now, highly sensitive people are much more likely to notice other people's emotions, right? Because if you're taking in more information from the world, then part of the world's information is what other people are doing around you. And I know and believe wholeheartedly that highly sensitive people are on this earth in order to help the collective work well together. And so what that means is that they have to notice other people's emotions. Now, a highly sensitive child who's struggling with that information, they don't have the skills to act on the empathy, they're going to be overloaded by that, right? So we have guilt, we have shame, we have overwhelm, we have meltdowns, right? Which is my specialty, working with that at level of intensity. And not all highly sensitive children are stuck in what I call a meltdown cycle. So we see deeply compassionate children, children who are mislabeled as deeply feeling, children who are mischaracterized as empaths when they might not necessarily be empaths. So it is important to understand that these four components that Elaine Aaron designed to, you know, to explain the trait all fit together, right? So when you have a regulated child who has regulation skills, they can act on that empathy effectively because they're effectively managing their own emotions. If they can't manage their own emotions, then trying to take care of other people creates a really tough, tricky, overwhelming situation, right? So we see those three so far playing into each other. And the fourth one is sensitive to subtleties, right? So going back to sensitive to subtleties related to the itchy tags, right? I remember knockdown, drag out meltdowns when my sister was six because of seams on her socks. She just could not, will not, won't go out the door with those seams in the socks. And part of this is one might presume is preference, right? So for me, I grew up in the 80s. I'm not highly sensitive, but I could not handle stirrups. You remember those pants with the...
Yes. Yes, I remember them very well.
Like, I can't do it, right? Same thing for me with wool sweaters. I can't do it, right? It's just itchy and no thank you. I don't want it.
It was
right?
There was a, my mom used to put us in these awful dresses. We had to wear dresses for everything. And it was like adrenaline underneath.
Oh, and yeah,
it
yeah.
Just, I could not focus. I just couldn't, what? I was just cut it out.
Right. And so think about experiencing the day like that all day long.
Oof.
Highly sensitive children without skills go through life as if they don't have skin. And so that experience, and this is a quote from Marsha Linehan, who designed and developed DBT, right? Again, like I said, the only evidence-based treatment to keep chronically suicidal and self-harming people out of the hospital. Now, because we don't want that worst case scenario to happen, we need to be paying attention to what leads to that in the homes if trauma isn't part of the equation, right? And that's the part, first piece to understanding why I had that aha moment and why my sister and I have a much more effective relationship than we ever did in childhood. And then, you know, quite frankly, then that she has the relationship with my parents is because I now understand that her experience is valid. Not necessarily skillful, but valid, right? And so what's really important as a parent when you're working on helping your child, especially if you're a homeschooler, is that you need to help yourself and educate yourself on this temperament trait so that you're not looking at it like a weakness, like something that needs to be erased or fixed. Your child isn't broken. And this is one thing that is critically important for us as parents when we're raising children who are emotionally gifted and might also be intellectually gifted. And that skill set is something that the world needs more of today. And where children get stuck is in the lack of capability, the internal self-concept, when they're constantly invalidated, that there's something wrong with them or they're broken or it's not that big of a deal, which is a huge invalidation statement. Right? Because for me, I can deal with the stirrups, right? I mean, we were growing up in the 80s. My mom bought those pants. I was wearing them.
Yeah.
Right. Like you said, my mom made us wear the dresses, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, it's not like she, you know, tied you down and threw it on, but you listened no matter what, right? It was just the way it was. And so, but it wasn't comfortable. No, but I didn't have an overactive nervous system with an intense experience of the world, taking in way more information than the average person, adding to that frustration. Right. And so, yeah, I have so I'm much
thinking,
to teach.
Yeah, but... no, I'm just thinking of a little person who is highly sensitive, who already is lacking skills and having to cope with all of this overstimulation and these deep feelings and noticing all these things and not having the words or the skill set to be able to effectively communicate to my mom. And so we act out and it's, and then I'm too much, your child, you know, then there's the judgment that other parents may have, or you may feel. It's a lot. This is why I'm so happy to have this conversation. Cause this is something that's not as understood and needs to be.
It's not. And it's not taught in common psychology. It's not taught in clinical language, as well as in regular run-of-the-mill parenting, even gentle parenting. Emotionally intelligent, focused parenting leaves much to be desired for parents of highly sensitive children. 70% of our clients work in the mental health or helping field. They're teachers, doctors, nurses, therapists. That says something.
Yeah.
Right. And so what does it say? Does it say that, you know, teachers, doctors, nurses, therapists aren't taking care of their children? No. What it says is that they didn't get this education. They still feel inadequate. And that's no way to live. Right. So,
And for me, when you said that, all I could think was in those helping fields, you are taught to support children and adults, etc., but so you're more likely to notice something is off and seek that help. Whereas if you aren't, you're less likely to, you're more likely to say, oh, something, my child's just a bit too much. When no, something, your child needs support and is probably a highly sensitive child. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I will say that the average adult therapist isn't taught child development. They're not taught child psychology. The average teacher is not taught anything other than behavior management from sticker charts and whatever the bureaucratic message is being sent, right? So if we have homeschoolers who pull their kids out of school, right? This is probably why. So, and in working in all kinds of school settings, you know, public school, private separate day school for kids who had social emotional needs, and they needed to be taught in a different manner, as well as locked door residential facilities. I've seen the gamut of well-meaning, intentional educational professionals who weren't equipped to serve this population.
And you know, it's when you
And
see
when you combo,
go ahead, go
go
ahead.
ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
One last thing is when you combo pack that with parents who don't have an effective system to and a process to raise their children, then the parents are left deferring to adults who don't know what they're talking about. And I'm a blunt talker. Like I said, we grew up with like big emotions in my house, and it was a look, suck it up and deal with it. So I took to that mentality, but and had to do a lot of unlearning in my adulthood. But I still ha I have a high driving personality. I'm very assertive. I'm very dominant, and I had to learn how to do that well and effectively. Just going back to that temperament trait, right? Because I'm not necessarily a laid back person. I've had to learn how to do that, right? And that's where my personality has shifted. Whereas my temperament is, let's run, let's succeed, let's experience all of what life gets has to offer. Because we're, you know, we only get one, and so. One thing that I know that a lot of parents and those of you who are watching and listening, we probably have had this too. You've done a lot of work, or your children are giving you the opportunity to do a lot of work on yourself. And as homeschoolers, we're blessed to have that opportunity. We're privileged to have that opportunity, and it's a lot of work, right? And you know, I'm not here to tell you that it's all sugar plums and rainbows. And it's also true that it's very, very rewarding when you have a process that will help your child be effective in their own learning process. And you can speed up and break cycles much more effectively than, you know, waiting for your kid to learn these skills as an adult like you did. So if that's something that you're interested in, then, you know, this conversation will be really useful for you, I'm sure.
Very true, very true. When you were talking about the various helping professionals who are not trained in this, I kept thinking back to why I always say I was a teacher that got in trouble because I just didn't agree with a lot of things that were done. And it wasn't until I was having a conversation with another speaker, and it dawned on me that because of my background is in child development. So I really pushed back against a lot of things that I was like, this is just not, everything in me says no, this is not appropriate. And so I can see how, like you just said, if you're going to a professional who is not trained in child development or doesn't have the tools to support you as a homeschool parent, you will think something's wrong with your child when really it's a skill set that you need to get support in helping your child develop. And that is absolutely amazing. Now, there was something you touched on just now. You talked about your temperament, which sounds very much like me. I was like, this is blunt talking. Let's go get it. Let's, yes. And I'm learning to relax. Megan, when you said that, I was like, this is my sister. We are learning to relax, bring it back a little bit. But your temperament versus your personality, can you talk about the difference between the two? And why it's important to know this when you're homeschooling.
Yes, absolutely. Because personality is changeable. One thing that so many adults we don't think is possible is that personality is alterable. Temperament generally isn't. All right. So what that means, and one thing that I tell my clients all the time, is don't confuse your child's personality with their identity of who they are and who they can be. Because reserved, introverted people can create a ripple effect of influence that is effective when they have emotion management skill sets. So can sensitive, thoughtful people. So can dominant people who are not aggressive, right? So one thing that I know when homeschoolers are working with children who are, potentially a bit of a puzzle to understand, or a lot of a puzzle to understand as a parent, right? You might start to follow the adage of what you see is what you get. Because now, again, this is related to my specialty. We help parents of highly sensitive kids who are experiencing daily meltdowns. And that meltdown cycle is a combo pack of the parent's disposition, the parent's way of life, the parent's experience of the world, plus the child's experience of the world right now. And that leads to the child's behavior. And most people will think that a child's behavior, how they interact with the world, is their personality. But that's the end result of a mixture of temperaments in the home, plus how the child is being raised. So when you change the way that you're raising your child, you change the way that your child presents to the world, and you get to see their strengths much more effectively. So temperament, like I said, sensitive. Kiddo who's going to notice small details, pick up on that, and do really well, right? So those of you who are listening, we've all been in some sort of partnership, most of us, because we have children, right? We want a sensitive partner. We want somebody who is attuned to our needs. We want that. We don't want somebody who it has a hairpin trigger. So if you're gauging the perception that sensitivity means hairpin trigger, that's the end result of an ineffective parenting environment, right? Now, I say ineffective. That doesn't mean you're wrong or you're bad or there's something wrong with you or you're broken. Same thing as I say about your child. All I know is that the way that you're raising your child is not effective if you're experiencing daily meltdowns. And I want to focus on this because today's, the summit, this conversation is related to littles, right? It's not developmentally appropriate for children, no matter their temperament, to be having daily meltdowns beyond the age of 4. And it's also true that 4-year-olds who are having knockdown, drag out meltdowns, like a 2-year-old, are developmentally, emotionally not on target. Now, doesn't mean that they are developmentally not on target from an intellectual standpoint where they need early intervention. But there's a big gap between how they're experiencing the world in an emotionally intelligent way and how they are and what their potential is, right? And that's really important as a parent for you to be paying attention to, because if you're it's just pure human nature. As when we're stuck and when we're stressed, we will move into survival mode or self-preservation, right? So as a parent, I'm doing the best I can. What's going on? And then when we're stuck in that survival mode and we're not moving out of that, we can move into victimhood. Who's to blame, right?
Yeah.
And these are high-driving professionals. I mean, nobody decides to sign up for homeschooling your kid if you don't have outcomes you're wanting to achieve, right? It's tough. It's tough to do. It's a hard job and very rewarding when you have, processes and skills, right? And some of that you're going to learn along the way, as some of our more old school homeschooling resources tell us.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that, you can equip yourself early to help your children become emotionally available for learning. And that's where the piece around, gauging children as defiant or obstinate or strong-willed or stubborn, those are all characteristics of a symptom of not having emotion regulation skills, right? Because highly sensitive children can be resilient. They can be playfully resilient. They can be curious. They can be communicative. They can act on the empathy they're taking in from the world and their observations. And that is something that I've raised my daughter to be able to do. She's highly sensitive. She's 7.5. She was naming that she was frustrated by the time she was 18 months. I happen to have a skill set. I had to study it, right? This was not my innate. My sister actually was very good as a babysitter. I was like, where's the TV as a babysitter at 12? Like I had to learn this skill. So yeah. If I can do it, so can my clients, because I had to learn it when I started to become a play therapist. I got my first job when the bubble burst in 2009. I took the first position I could get that didn't make me travel all over Timbuktu. And that was working with young children and Head Start and, you know, straight out of DC with tons of trauma. And I loved the position. It was, you know, a blessing to receive that job, but it was nothing like what I thought I was going to do. And so my drive was to work with adolescents because, like I said, I'm a straight shooter. Let's go, right? Which makes it very easy for me to work with driven parents now. Yeah. Not because they're acting like adolescents, but when we're struggling with our children, sometimes we can be reactive, right? So that skill set is something that we're not necessarily proud of as parents, but it's certainly something we can change. All right, I'm going off on a little bit of tangent there, but I can imagine there's something we're gleaning, right, from this temperament, the difference between temperament and personality. A healthy, thoughtful, sensitive kid is self-aware. They're focused on collective harmony. They are empathetic and they're acting on it. A stressed out kid who's sensitive and thoughtful, they have a difficulty acting on that empathy. They are overwhelmed by it. They may have a mismatch. When they're calm, they're demonstrating great compassion, especially for animals. When they're not calm, they're calling brother or sister, all kinds of names, maybe even hitting, right? And land in those punches, which is really hard as a parent, really hard to witness and experience. And you can start to wonder, I mean, their siblings are fine. What's going on? It can't be me. Right. Yeah. Which is where that, you know, must be something wrong with my kid cycle comes out. It was very painful for families.
It would be that when you were talking, I kept thinking, one thing that I see constantly in the homeschool community, and even in regular schools, when they are talking about curriculum, and to them, curriculum, you open the book and you go. And to me, I was always and always have practiced that there is my unwritten curriculum, which is part of the environment, the emotional space I am creating for this child. So if I am working with my child at home, who is highly sensitive, I need to take into account, how am I actually structuring the actual living curriculum to support my child and make sure they are able to learn? And you mentioned emotional availability for learning. Mm-hmm. Can you expand a little bit on that? What do you mean by emotional availability for learning?
Sure. So a child needs to be curious in order to learn. Mm-hmm. As homeschoolers, we want our children to love learning, right? There's a reason why we chose not to put them in a setting that would be easily overwhelming, that would create a scenario where they're expected to just recite, cram, do lots of busy work, right? This is a community where I get to speak just as a homeschooler.
Yes.
And be real here, right? There's a lot of reasons why we decided not to put our kids in a 1-to-35 ratio, which is where it's at in the public system near me. Yikes. And so, you know, let alone being an entrepreneur and a, you know, driven professional and working in all kinds of settings in the educational field, I knew that that just wasn't a good fit for myself as well as for my children, right? And so part of that was a decision that children need to be able to stay curious and inquisitive, right? And we actually train that out of them when we educate them as my way or the highway, or do as I say, not as I do, or do it right now, right? And so what we're doing is we're focusing on external motivation. I'm the one who's going to, you know, give you a swift kick in the pants to get the work done, and then you'll do it, and then we'll be happy-go-lucky, right? But what happens is that the child stops liking learning, right? And that's just how the systems are designed in most public and private schools today. So in homeschooling, we still have the opportunity to do that. Is it an effective opportunity? No, right? So what that means is, as parents, we need to communicate to our children and help them stay internally motivated. The best way to be internally motivated is to stay curious, right? A love for learning is stemming from curiosity.
Love that. And that is so very important. That has always been a big push for me, that children have their internal motivations, and that you validate, you know, yes, this is what is motivating you. Let's go down that path. You know, I love that so much. Thank you so very much for this conversation. It's been so enlightening because, like I told you when we were talking beforehand, I keep seeing this popping up all around me, and I needed someone to explain it better and how it dovetails with homeschooling. It's absolutely been amazing. Now, before we go, I have three things I need to ask you. So if you were to tell a homeschool mama three things they need to keep in mind that they can take away from this conversation we just had, what would be like your top three? This is what you need to remember.
Number one, don't judge your child's behavior as an indicator of their personality. Start to look at what they're capable of beyond what you see in front of you on the day to day. Pay attention to how they initially respond to the world and notice where the strengths could be coming from that angle rather than how they are behaving, right? So their initial response when they're calm compared to when they're not calm and they're dysregulated. Number two is that if your child is highly sensitive, you are the one who will be changing how they experience the world, how they respond to the world. This is something we didn't necessarily touch on too much, but I do teach my parents that in resources that I have. And parents of highly sensitive kids are the therapeutic change agent for their child. That's number two. Number three is that if your child is not curious, they're not learning.
Love that.
Because if they're not curious, they're in fight or flight, and you can't learn anything if you're in can't, won't, no way, or helplessness, which is the highest level of fight or flight. So slow down, right? Get a better strategy and dive in and thrive. Then thriving is available.
Thank you. That was great. So those are our three big takeaways. I hope you guys heard those. Now, you also are being so gracious as to give us a free gift. Can you tell us a little bit about your free gift and then where we can find you online?
Absolutely. So again, we help parents whose children are struggling significantly by teaching parents and empowering them to empower their children to be playfully resilient. And these are children who feel big feelings, but more importantly, experience more from the world and are deep processors of the world. And they are the leaders of society, especially in the future, where, you know, the career trajectories are thinking outside the box. That's where the career focus is headed. So we need to hone our children's capacity to critically think now and to stay curious for learning, right? And with that being said, if your child is experiencing daily meltdowns, that is not developmentally appropriate, and you can change that dynamic in your home with a proper strategy. I walk you through the five shifts that my clients make and the high-level overview of that process in my free training.
Excellent. Thank you so much for this very, very insightful conversation. I know a lot of parents will benefit from this. And if you enjoyed this conversation, please be sure to join me for more speakers where we help you happily homeschool your little. Bye.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of How to Parent Your Highly Sensitive Child Like a Ninja. We release a brand new episode every week, so be sure to click subscribe. If you like what you've heard and you're interested in seeing if you're a fit to work with us at MTC, here's what I want you to do next. Head on over to meganthompsoncoaching.com/call and book an appointment with our team. We'll get on the phone for about 60 minutes and we'll get you clarity on where you're stuck in parenting your sensitive child or teen, what your goals are for supporting your child's development. And if we can help you, we'll get you started on knowing exactly what to do to eliminate that meltdown cycle. Eliminating the daily meltdown cycle does not happen by itself. You need expert guidance to make it happen. And we've helped hundreds of clients from all over the world end that cycle in as little as 8 weeks. So to see if we can help you do the same, head on over to meganthompsoncoaching.com/call. I'm Megan Thompson, and we look forward to speaking to you soon.